coming to you live from a very, 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 very long line at the bank. It's this week's Apocalypse. I'm your co-host, Kevin Lennon. With me, as always, is John Ferris. John, have you prepped for your task today?
Yeah.
You got the bag, right?
Yep, got the bag. Sweating profusely.
That's good. Well, no one will see once we put on our silly masks. I assume we're probably going to... Are we going to wear masks?
Oh, I forgot something then.
Oh, you didn't bring them? Oh, okay. well, we could maybe fashion one out of some checkbooks.
Although everyone wears a mask these days, so...
We do.
We're already wearing our...
Yes, we have our mandated sort of face masks in that... Hopefully they'll disguise our identity. Anyway, we're going to rob this goddamn bank. I probably shouldn't have shouted that so loudly. In the bank. But, you know, no one seemed to notice. The tellers are still working away.
They're in a zombie-like state.
They're just going around and around and around. Now, John, I wouldn't call myself a professional criminal.
No.
I've never really engaged in crime before, in an active sort of in-person kind of sense.
Yeah, maybe like jaywalking now and then or something.
That's not a crime outside of like California and other stupid places where they decided to victimize pedestrians for some reason. So I haven't even done that.
Ooh.
I haven't even jaywalked.
Look at you, squeaky clean.
Purely because it's impossible for me to jaywalk because it's a stupid American crime. It shouldn't be a crime anyway. But anyway, let's not argue about what should and shouldn't be a crime, John.
No. That's a long, dark road.
Jesus God. So, I've been very nervous. You're obviously very, very nervous. So I thought what we'll do is we've got plenty of time, but we have already been in this queue for several hours and it looks like it's going to be a few hours more. So my thinking is, I've got three movies here about bank robberies.
Yep.
Okay. So if we're going to learn how to rob this bank, my theory is we watch these three movies and we try to get the best advice for getting in and getting out clean, I guess, or maybe we're looking for what people did wrong. I don't know. But either way, we're going to try and learn from their mistakes and maybe their triumphs.
Yeah.
Here. So I have from 1991... Point Break, directed by Catherine Bigelow. Then we have Heat from 1995, directed by Michael Mann.
Yeah.
And then we have podcast favorite, Dog Day Afternoon from 1975, directed by someone John very much appreciates and I've come very much to appreciate, a man named Sidney Lumet.
Yes.
Which we have settled on that as it's not Lumet, it's Lumet, right?
Yes, yeah, definitely.
As far as we know. Right, so let's sit down and we'll watch these movies. Well, don't sit down.
Oh,
we'll
no.
Stand here in the cube. Wait, loser, please.
We don't want to draw attention to ourselves.
No, we don't want to just sit down on the bank floor with our bags full of whatever it is that we've brought to do the robbery. I mean, checkbooks that we've brought to lodge checks. Anyway, let's watch these movies. All right, well, I feel a little confused, but hopefully we can hash it out now, and we'll analyze and we'll learn what we can from Surfing Movie, Point Break, directed by Catherine Bigelow. It is about bank robbers, though, partially.
Spoilers.
A bank does get robbed at the beginning. And it is the impetus for the rest of the movie, but it almost does take a back seat. But anyway, John, what did you think of Point Break?
Point Break's okay, but I do have... There's like a weird thing I find where people of our age group...
Yes.
...seem to absolutely adore this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't get it, because... I mean, it's too long for a start.
Oh, extremely.
It's like, it gets really...
I was shocked when I saw the runtime
before
I started watching the film.
Two
and it was like,
hours.
Sure does feel like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, because there's a lot of shots of them surfing, which is like, I get it. Plus, surfers seem like dicks.
Mostly,
according to this movie.
A lot of them seem like assholes. Especially the Nazi ones.
Yeah, well, I mean, they're instantly dicks.
Yeah, that's sort of dicks by default. Yeah. Nazis are dicks by default. I don't think I'm shattering any boundaries or making any...
You might be surprised with some people.
Yeah, well, I don't... Those people are dicks too.
Yeah.
But I'm confident about that.
But, like, even Brody himself, you know, they're mm-hmm. trying to paint him as this, like, you know, wise, you know... deep spiritual guru almost, and it's just like everything he says and going, you're just a twat, you're just an idiot.
He's a massive cunt.
Like,
you must
stop
say.
Spouting your pseudo-intellectual fucking pseudo-philosophy and just like,
yeah,
you're a dick. You kidnap someone at one point in the movie. You're not a hero. You're not this benevolent character that you think you are.
Yeah, I think it's more other people have decided he is this thing.
Yeah.
But he's actually a dick. I wish everybody in this movie's a dick. Like,
yeah, that's true.
I've had no sympathy for any of the characters in this movie really at all. No. I don't really think.
And the names as well are laughable.
I mean, Johnny Utah is our protagonist, played by Keanu Reeves, who's a man, I think... can carry off the name Johnny Utah in a way.
Yeah.
But you hear that and you think, oh, he's Johnny Utah and he was a football player. And you actually, if you hear that in your head, he's an ex-football player called Johnny Utah. I envision a huge square of a man, maybe a cube kind of person, who just stomps through places and is like, I don't know, like maybe like a Jesse Ventura shape of a human. Yeah. When I hear Johnny Utah and then you see Keanu Reeves and you're like, okay, well, you know what? That works too, I guess. But I don't know if that's... And yeah, him, like, he's all right in it. I mean, his acting is garbage.
Yeah, he's very wooden. It's not one of the best, exactly.
Like, we watched him in The Devil's Advocate, in which he actually did a fine job.
Yeah.
A very fine job. Surprisingly, he was... one of the best, like, I thought he... Now, I had some reservations about some of the other actors in it.
Yeah.
But I think he did pretty damn well. In this, he hasn't quite got there.
No.
Like, he's coming straight off, like, Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey here as well.
Yeah.
Which is a weird one. I think they were probably... They might have been filmed at the same time, maybe. Or maybe Bogus Journey, maybe just after this, maybe. But either way, he's not doing... When he's back then, when he wasn't being Ted,
yeah,
he was just like, I could take him seriously as Ted Theodore Logan, but at this point, putting him in this, you're just like, yeah, he is a block of wood, and Swayze is fine, but his character's completely unlikable. It's kind of, there are times when it's fun.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's not without merit, you know. As I said at the start there, it's all right. It's you can definitely find worse ways to spend your evening. Yeah. But it does overstay its welcome.
Mm-hmm.
The writing is kind of crappy. And
it's a stupid concept for a movie that they probably thought sounded really clever.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't.
It just doesn't work.
And plus I didn't like the editing of a lot of the action shots. You know, it was very choppy, and I didn't enjoy it. Like it just felt. I mean, okay, yeah, it felt chaotic in that way, and maybe that's what they were going for. But it was just one of those things where you can't really see what's going on, and it's a lot of times not like constantly, but you know, the bank robbing scenes are fun.
They are, actually. That is true. They are fun. It's a bit annoying whenever they do the impersonations of the presidents that they have disguised themselves as.
But they're
the rubber masks. But it works with the characters because they all suck. That's what I learned from this movie. I think more than anything, I think I learned that surfers must be just shit people.
Yeah.
They must just suck. Like, every surfer in this film, like, there is the Surf Nazis, one of whom is played by Anthony Kiedis, weirdly. Yeah.
Surf Nazis make it sound like, you know, like grammar Nazis in that sense of the
like, the kind of people who would stand there and say, oh, you can't do that when you're surfing. Yeah.
Which actually happens as well, Keanu. Yeah. Like, Johnny Utah is, like, trying to learn, and there's, like, a bunch of, like, surfers, like, laughing at him and going, ha ha ha, look at that dick.
It's
you're just going, are surfers really that clicky? And it was, they probably are.
They might be, like, they say in the movie, they're very territorial. And you're like, are they, though? I don't know if I learned about actual surf culture in this film.
It actually reminded me of a time when I was, I think, in my mid-20s, and I was like, I'd love to learn archery. And I didn't know where to go. And then I found this, like, group of archers down in an area that they would go there every Saturday or something. So I walked down to them, and I was very polite and asked the guy, oh, like, where would you go to learn? And he looked at me as if I was something that I congealed on the bottom of his shoe and went, oh, we don't know. And blah, blah. Like, he was just so rude.
Oh,
like,
we just knew from birth.
It's like, archery's not something you learn. It's something you are. But I just remember, like, walking away from that experience going, what an absolute cunt.
Yeah, I have a similar experience, but in relation to paintball. Well, it wasn't paintball. It's the one where Airsoft, I believe it
Airsoft,
was.
Airsoft, yeah.
I believe it was Airsoft because it hurts more. But it was my brother's stag do that we went on, and we showed up there and we were all getting out of our car just in our t-shirts, just a bunch of sort of grungy kind of dudes, you know. And we got out, and the guys two cars along, who were the guys that we were going to be playing against, who we didn't know, were there. They were basically looked like they were gearing up a SWAT team. They had, like, big, like, black boiler suits and, like, armor and big proper, like, helmets, and they brought their own guns and all this stuff. And I was just like, oh, no, 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 no. And they took it way too seriously. I don't think they liked the fact that we were laughing and shouting dumb things the entire time.
Oh my god.
But I think I had a really good time because they were taking it too seriously on that particular occasion. So yeah, John, that's how I feel like, that's how the surfers come off in this film.
Yeah.
As far as bank robbery goes, we see some banks getting robbed in it, but I don't know, like, if they're doing it well. They do seem disciplined initially.
It seems like, there's also the added bonus they have that the cops seem to all be terrible in this city. Like,
they're all dicks too.
The only thing they find is sand, which I find hard to believe because they're not being that careful, really.
They're not. And they've all got long hair, so some of that's probably fallen. As a long-haired man myself, I can tell you that you do tend to leave some of that behind in places you go. So, yeah, I find it completely unbelievable.
I mean, Johnny Utah and Pappas, played by Gary Busey, are terrible. I mean, they literally, they're on a stakeout and couldn't be worse at it.
He's busy reading the newspaper and then looking at his fucking sub friggin' meatball sandwich and just misses the entire robbery.
Yeah, I mean,
what the fuck?
It's laughable. Oh, it's laughable how bad ridiculous. The police are in this. And I don't know. But,
like, it has its moments here and there where it's fun. And I have liked Kathryn Bigelow movies.
Yeah.
She did Near Dark, which I haven't seen in a very long time. But I remember being surprised by it.
Yeah.
Because it was a vampire movie that to me felt very different from other vampire movies. It was like kind of in a similar way that The Lost Boys is different to other vampire movies, where they're not these like, I am the handsome Dracula. They're like sort of like, you know, I mean, in Near Dark, they're kind of like, they're almost like homeless. They're like hobos.
Yeah.
In Near Dark, and it's violent and it's grungy and it's nasty and it's really good. This film, compare it to Near Dark, doesn't measure up. I think I still like Near Dark. I'll have to rewatch it again.
Yeah.
Because it's been a long time. But yeah, I'm going to say that I was kind of bored for a lot of Point Break. Except when sometimes when Keanu Reeves talks, it's funny because it's bad and I feel bad laughing at him. again, because he seems like such a cool guy, and he has really found his groove.
Yeah.
Since then.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Like, really has, and he's done very, very well for himself. He's done. He's talented in very specific ways, and he knows it. But this movie just doesn't cut it.
There's a lot of, hey, bro, we're gonna,
hey, bro. Hey, the bro sounds really forced, and you expect that to come from him easily, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
It sounds, every time they say bro, every time Swayze or him say bro, it's painful. It sounds like you're like uncle trying to be cool with the kids.
Yeah.
You know, and like, and maybe us trying to be cool with the kids now at this stage, actually.
Oh dear.
Yeah, but let's stick with the uncle metaphor.
The only thing is, we wouldn't try.
No, I wouldn't try. No, I wouldn't. I would never call anyone bro and try to be serious about it.
Let's jump out of plane. Yeah,
that's a great idea, bro.
And that scene just, I don't know, that whole
forever
sequence just...
It goes on forever, and it feels like it's just in there because they wanted to have a skydiving scene.
Well, apparently Patrick Swayze is a massive skydiver, and insurance problems where he wasn't allowed to be skydiving, but after shoots he was like bringing people. And in fact, he convinced Gary Busey to go at one stage because he's like, "Oh, you got to try it, man." so I mean, maybe there is something to Brody's character that is very similar to Swayze.
Yeah, maybe he put a bit of himself in there, which is fine, which you expect actors to do sometimes.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I still don't like him.
No.
I don't like anybody in this movie. They're all terrible. I don't know why they go skydiving. I don't know why they're surfing half the time. It's just a bunch of it. It seemed like it was an excuse for these guys to just go and do some, like, I don't want to, like, X game stuff. You know, and then that's it. That's the whole movie, is just that. And sometimes it's fun to watch, and sometimes it's fun to watch Keanu Reeves, generally. But sometimes it's painful.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say this is not a great movie.
No.
Keanu has done better. Swayze has done better. I would rather watch Roadhouse than this.
Yeah.
I would rather watch John Wick or Johnny Mnemonic than this.
Wow.
And again, I may eat those words at some point in the future because it's been a long time since I saw Johnny Mnemonic. But I think I would prefer it to this. All right, well, it's time to start the exciting music, I think. If we could play it low in the... Oh, I don't have any music in my phone. Damn. Okay, well, can we just like... Something exciting is about to happen. We're going to rob this bank. Oh, shit, I said it again. I should stop. This is
just instrumental.
Okay, yes. So we're at the little counter where you write checks. We're nearly at the teller window. I say maybe we've got another, like, maybe half an hour to 40 minutes before we get there. But... I can feel it, John, and I'm starting to get... I'm now sweating buckets, which, you know, I brought these buckets along because I thought we might need them. But from the movie we watched so far, I don't know if we're going to need buckets. I mean, they could have been building sandcastles on that beach in Point Break, but we're not going to do that right now. We're going to talk about, did anybody use any buckets in Michael Mann's Heat? Don't think so.
No, it was a very bucketless movie.
Right, well, get rid of these. They're off they go. Right, but what did you then think of Michael Mann's Heat from 1995, extremely?
Michael Mann's Heat is about an hour too long, at least.
Probably.
I think there's, you know, this is the annoying thing. I think there's a really amazing heist movie in there, but there's a lot of, like, it's got high praise, like, you know. But,
oh, yeah.
I think there's a lot of things wrong with this movie that kind of goes almost unchecked in a lot of ways. Like, there's a lot of unnecessary scenes. Like, even the opening scene is like these almost like wee vignettes of the characters at the beginning. And they go on too long. Like, and they're kind of. I get the sense that they're meant to be showing you their lives and like their day to day, but. Doesn't give you anything. There's no like real oh, that's cool. Like, I really know this character now. And but I think one of the main problems I have with this is they should just take out the female characters, because every female character in this is so badly written.
Oh, disgracefully and, like, so badly written at times.
They are literally just there as props.
Yep. 100%.
The worst case of this is the woman who ends up forming a relationship with Robert De Niro's character.
Yeah.
At the end, me and my wife were laughing that she's literally treated like a... Like, you could replace her with a dog and it would have the same effect. She is left in the car and she just said... Like, she doesn't say anything. She just looks.
Yeah.
And she's like... Like, if you watch that sequence back again and just think of it as a dog instead of a woman, it works perfectly, and it's so bad. And it's not the, like, not detracting from the actors, detracting from whoever wrote this character.
Written and directed by Michael Mann.
Yeah, so
place the blame squarely at Michael Mann's feet.
Michael Mann must know very two-dimensional females, or he's just, I don't know, But, yeah. I mean, you could probably argue that that's the point. They're meant to be, you know, something about masculinity, blah, 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 or something. But I don't know. It just, it's really hard to get on board with the movie, especially because it spends so long, like, kind of, you know, attempting to explore the characters.
Yep.
With these relationships.
Especially, Al Pacino's character is like, okay, you get pretty early on, okay, right, he is way more dedicated to his job than he is to anything else in his life. They make a throwaway comment about the fact that he has had three divorces, or he's on his third marriage, maybe, I don't know which it is. Either way, the fact that they say that, and then they say, what does that tell you about him? That's all we actually needed.
Yeah.
That's all that was needed. They didn't need to have this huge time sink of his weird, dysfunctional relationship with his wife and stepdaughter.
Yeah.
Who, I don't know why, the stepdaughter is literally just ginned up for drama purposes.
Yep.
And it lends nothing to the plot. Now, I am going to say that I do really, really like this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the relationship stuff is trash garbage. It's there to serve a purpose for the plot and give them arcs, but it's not needed.
It's so clumsily done.
And it's badly done. Like, it would be better if it wasn't in it, because it is done so poorly. It is kind of insulting at times. Very insulting.
The bits I love in this movie, and I do love, like, there's scenes, like, the heist scenes are spectacular. They're amazing.
Fucking spectacular is the word I was going to use as well.
Yeah. You know, all of them, and then
the right word.
Like, I think there's a lack of subtlety in this movie that, you know, because they try to explore the home lives of these criminals and Al Pacino's detective way too much, that it would have been better if it had left enough of that to the imagination, where you kind of, as the audience member, like, build their lives, or, like, from these wee snippets of what you get from them in their working lives. But I don't know, it's so bizarre in a way that I really want to love this movie, but watching it is a slog. It's almost 3 hours long, and it has no need to do it. But everything about it, like the shot compositions, the lighting,
it's gorgeous.
Everything technical about it is brilliant.
I love Michael Mann's style.
Yeah.
Like, there is stuff that maybe some people would look at and not like it, and they would have valid reasons. I mean, this is the man who directed Manhunter, which is a film I adore, but has a similar problem with its female characters being props.
Yeah.
That's a big problem in Manhunter. Now, whether or not that... I've read Red Dragon is the book that's based on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the female characters are kind of taken from the book, but they maybe have gone through a Michael Mann filter in that. But Like, Manhunter is beautiful, and it's the film I think of whenever people talk about a vaporwave aesthetic. Mm-hmm. When they talk about that, this modern term that has come to mean, it's basically like you got that like sort of vista of the sea and the beach and like the sort of pinkish sky with like some like cheesy, like maybe like New Romantic or like something like that song playing over it. Like, Michael Mann uses a lot of pop music,
yeah,
in his stuff, and sometimes it's jarring. In Manhunter especially, it's very jarring.
I think in this, but it's the opposite. It's, yeah, it's all like, I don't like the music in this movie, mm-hmm, for the opposite reason. It's almost like,
yeah,
it's like Moby maybe, or something. It is Moby. Something very, yeah,
it's Moby. It's very, but sort it just of seems, subtle techno.
Yeah, it just, yeah, kind of almost feels like it's,
yeah,
it drags everything down. You know, yep, there's no real agency to it, and yeah, it just, it seems like almost incidental music that just kind of,
yeah. And no more is that felt in the one most powerful scene in this movie where there is no music,
yeah,
at all.
Yeah.
It is all, and it's the scene that everybody talks about. It's the scene that is the reason people bought the DVD of this movie.
Yes.
Back when this came out on DVD, everybody who's like, when they first came out with like home surround sound systems, this was the film that you bought and brought your mates around,
yep,
to show off your surround sound system. Now, maybe you just probably just put it straight to that scene and said, let's all just sit in the sofa and just appreciate this, because it's, and I don't think I can, you know, overstate how powerful that is.
Yeah.
Like, it's wonderfully well shot. It is exciting, and it's horrible, and it's incredibly gritty, and it's real.
Yeah.
It feels real and nasty and brutish, that whole thing, and that is mainly thanks to the sound design. It is just incredible. It is the linchpin of the movie. In my head, it's the finale of the movie, but it isn't. It's nowhere near the end.
No.
It maybe should be.
Yeah.
It maybe should be. They maybe should jump straight from that particular scene to maybe the last, what is the last 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. They could maybe get there a lot quicker. Oh, yeah, you could get there
a lot cleaner as well.
They don't.
There's a lot of padding in this movie. You know,
yeah, there's so much. It's like, this movie should be 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like, at the outside, it should be 2 hours, maybe a bit less than 2 hours, but there is just so much, just the women in my life, and the women in this guy's life, and here they are hanging out here, and here they are hanging out here, and, like, I love it when they're being, when Al Pacino is on screen, and he's doing his job, he's fucking electric,
he's although I do brilliant. I don't know if maybe I missed something, but does it, yeah, insinuate that he's maybe coked up at some stage? Because
I don't know. I don't think that you see that. Because, maybe Al Pacino was.
Yeah, well, I meant the character, but yeah, that might, yeah, actually explain this. But yeah. I felt like some of his like mental outbursts were a wee bit kind of jarring, and it just didn't feel right for the scene. Some of them worked very well, and some was just him,
yeah,
being kind of crazy. But I don't know. Like, part of me did think, did they mention that like he's on coke or something? And I don't know.
Think so. They hang out with some criminals at certain points, but you know, and you feel like he is a bit of like, not, he's not necessarily a dirty cop, but he's maybe not 100% sticking by the rules all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't think they ever openly do that. It's maybe just the way Al Pacino's playing it. Yeah. Seems that way.
Because I love when he has these outbursts. We're going to move on to a movie from earlier in his career where it's very well done, and like it's almost like subdued in a way for Al Pacino,
yeah,
to know.
Yeah.
But even things like Devil's Advocate, when we looked at that, like he has these big mad outbursts, but it suited the character more, and it was when he said them, it made sense for what he was saying. Like, there's a handful of times where he just kind of erupts, and you're like, what the fuck? Where the fuck did that come
out of
from?
Nowhere, yeah. And there's no reason for it.
Yeah.
Like, with the bit where he's like, she's got a great ass! Yeah. And you're like, that is the one moment where I'm like, it's the one I always, whenever I do Al Pacino impressions, I like to shout that, because it's funny, yeah. Because it comes out of nowhere, it makes no sense.
It's one of those ones that I always think is from Scent of a Woman, because he just, like, it almost makes sense that he's spouting madness in that movie, because he is a wee bit, like, he's kind of lost
it
a wee bit.
He's extremely eccentric in Scent of a Woman. Too.
But it always surprises me. I was like, no, that's actually from Heat.
And it's just like, I forgot it was in Heat as well. And I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I say that all the time.
I know, it's actually become a bit of an issue, Kevin.
Yeah, I know. Whenever it's like, whenever I'm being like, oh yeah, Al Pacino, outsized performance. And that's the one thing I go to. But again, and it's not in Scent of a Woman. It's between that and like, tell me when to turn in Scent of a Woman.
Yeah, I do that all the time when I'm driving. I need to stop.
Yeah, which is why you think, oh, that must be from Scent of a Woman, because Heat, that's not the tone of Heat.
No.
And then you watch Heat and you're like, and it isn't the tone of Heat. And then it happens and you're like, what the fuck, dude? Where did that come from? But he can be brilliant. And Pacino, Pacino, you know, and he is brilliant.
For the most part, he is. Yeah. Which makes those bits even worse.
Yeah, it's weird.
Stop it. Or like, Michael Mann, maybe do another take?
Yeah, De Niro's way more subdued in this movie. Yeah, his performance is pretty fucking solid.
Yeah.
It's not his fault that the lines he's saying when he is in female company are bad.
Yeah.
It's not his fault. It's the lines as written, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And they're not great. And Michael Mann has done some good work. As I said before, I love Manhunter. I really like, he did Collateral, which is a film I thoroughly enjoy.
Oh, yes, yeah.
It's probably my favorite Tom Cruise movie. I don't have a lot of... Magnolia is brilliant. I don't think he's... because he's not really the central protagonist in Magnolia, so I don't think of it that way, but I guess you're right.
It's like an ensemble cast, there's a whole load of different stories.
Yeah, but it's like him and Jamie Foxx are the linchpins of Collateral.
Yeah.
And they're both great in it, and it works really well. And it still probably is. I do like Magnolia a lot, but... And I'd have a soft spot for Rain Man, too. You know, he's been in a few good films, but I think Collateral is one of the ones where I'm like, oh, this is something different for him. Now, he's gone on after that to do a bunch of annoying spy things. And Mission Impossible, I do like that, too. But the sequels of that really get out of hand. Anyway, this is not about Tom Cruise. This is about Michael Mann. And he's done some great movies. But again, he's just bad at handling women in things.
Yeah.
He's just not good at it.
There's not a single female character in this that is believable or has great... Has agency
at all.
Even Justine, Al Pacino's, Lieutenant Vincent Hanna's wife in it.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, all of a sudden just turns on him. There's no real like build up to it. There's no... Like he misses one... From the audience standpoint, he misses one party and... She seems to be okay with it, but then all of a sudden, that's it. Yeah. She starts bringing random men back to the house.
It's almost like you almost get like a Tommy Wiseau kind of like, oh, this maybe happened to Michael Mann at some point, and he's bitter about it.
Yeah.
So he's written it this way in this really selfish kind of like from my perspective kind of way. Oh, look how irrational this was.
It was all right until she just fucking, I don't know. She just cracked up one day.
Yeah. Oh, then she was fine later. And then, she was mad again. Oh, well, maybe because you were a dick again. I don't know. So, yeah, that doesn't work. None of that stuff works.
Yeah. And what's the deal with it? See, when Ashley Judd's character is caught in an affair, it seems to me, the way it's shot, that Robert De Niro just happened to be there.
Yeah,
he didn't seem to be tailing her or anything. He just happened to be.
Just happened to notice, like, how the fuck did he know where she was if he went to see her? Or what was going on? Yeah, it doesn't make
he's making a call in a phone booth at one stage, and then you just, like, to someone else, and then you just see him watching them, like,
the
go. Yeah, like, it's like, that was a bit of serendipity there.
I mean, I'm sure the theory is that he was following her, but they do not establish that, really, and it is confusing. And again, I think that's this film's biggest problem, is that all the women are props, and... They tie the relationship stuff to the characters in a way that feels forced.
Yeah.
To get to the conclusion. Or to, like, show, like, as if it's, like, a flaw in the characters. You know, like, it's a character flaw.
Yeah.
And I just... and again, I thoroughly enjoyed a big, huge chunk of this film. But that stuff just drags it down and drags it down. And it makes it so long.
Yeah. Like, when I think of the parts of this movie that I like, it, I think it would have been, again, just to really, like... emphasize it. It's you've got that first robbery they have with, you know, Slick, and then they end up having to get rid of him. You've got you've got Van Zandt's, you know, they have a bit of trouble with him when they're trying to sell back the bonds and things like that.
Yeah,
you've got
Henry Rollins' little bit there. He doesn't have a lot to do, but I like seeing him.
And you've got the bank robberies. There's another robbery they attempt, and they kind of they end up stopping it midway through, but you know, the actual heists in this are great. The actual, like, you know, action parts and the parts where you see them in their element, and that's probably what annoys me the most about this movie, is like there is a fucking phenomenal heist movie in there. It's just padded in with all this other crap that doesn't work.
And the fact is that it feels like it's maybe an hour too long, which is a lot.
Once Val Kilmer gets a haircut, he's unrecognizable.
Oh my god, so bad. That's so stupid.
Yeah.
That is so stupid. John, it's
so dumb.
Stupid. Oh, but... again, I will say, I still kind of like Heat. I like things about it. It's just that they are smothered by the cushioning. My metaphor is getting real rough here. But
you're struggling. You're sweating even more now.
Yeah, it's like it's like a great performance muffled by a pillow. I don't know. There you go. That'll do, John. De Niro, Pacino together on screen. They made a big deal about that.
Ooh, yeah, the day that was. It like is the good. Major thing at the time.
It is good when it happens. I love the scene where they're sitting in the diner and they're actually having a conversation. Mm-hmm. I really, 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 really like that scene a lot. It goes on really a long time, but I like it. It deserved to go on a long time, but everything else in the movie that went on for a long time should have just stayed on the cutting room floor. Okay, John, well, I have taken one of these little sort of deposit notes, and I've just written on it, can I have the money put in bag?
Seems reasonable.
Yeah, does that seem like enough? To you, I'll just hand that to the lady at the counter.
We're robbing them doesn't mean we have to be rude, so yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing I've noticed about bank robbers. They're very rude when they're robbing.
Yeah.
Mostly they're quite rude. Except maybe in one case that maybe we should talk about, where they're maybe foolishly not rude. Dog Day Afternoon. John, what did you think of Sidney Lumet's Dog Day Afternoon?
Ah, this is a great movie. This again is one of the reasons I love Sidney Lumet. I've seen this when I was quite a young teenager, and I think it's definitely one of those movies that's formed my opinion on other movies. You know, it was in my formative years of getting to know like real cinema and things like that. You know, I know a bit about the background of this movie and certain things, and it just makes it even more enjoyable for me.
Yeah.
This is actually based on a true story. This might be one of the very few movies that is based on a magazine article.
Yeah, it's based on a magazine article, which the headline was Dog Day Afternoon.
Yeah.
That's why it's called that. That was the sort of a tabloidy title of this article about this bank robbery. And the more the film goes on, the more unbelievable it becomes that it really happened.
They actually did. They were going to call it. There was two other names. I'm going to look them up here quickly because
I want to know them.
Yeah, because they are terrible. And it was actually Sidney Lumet was like, no, it doesn't work for it. So bear with me.
That's not one of the titles.
No. Bear with me. No, that's a story about a child who finds a best friend in a large brown bear.
That sounds very handy to have. You could attack your enemies.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
Yeah.
It wasn't two. It was actually the working title was Boys in the Bank. And that's
Boys
what the
Boys in the Bank. Bank.
And Sidney Lumet hated it, and
yeah,
he said,
me too.
He said it makes the film appear to be light and fluffy.
Yeah.
So he actually changed it to Dog Day Afternoon, but you're right, it was from that article. But he wanted that title because I recently got his book Making Movies, and there's a lot of like kind of why he made certain decisions for each movie and blah 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 and all this in it.
Yeah.
It goes through the technical aspects of movies, and the thing that he keeps mentioning with Dog Day Afternoon and the kind of feel almost he wanted, or the style, was he wanted this hot and stuffy day near the end of the summer, and that's what a lot of the decision went into this. And apparently all those outside scenes were in the winter, so like the actors had to like suck
in his shirt.
The actors had to like suck on ice cubes before they went out, or you would have seen their breath and things
like
this. Oh man! You know, so it's like things like that are just like it's just, you know, movie making magic.
Indeed. Well, bloody hell, I was convinced.
Yeah. It does seem really insanely warm. But yeah, like even from the opening of this movie, like. It's got that similar thing to Network where it feels like a documentary. It's all these like it almost like juxtapose it to Heat's opening with all these like wee vignettes, and you see some of the characters that are going to be in the movie, but at the time you don't even realize. It just feels like they're going their day to day until the camera starts getting a bit more, you know, closer to these three guys in the car, and then the story starts. But even from that, like it's just so well done. The lighting in it's fantastic. It's all they wanted this all to be kind of naturally lit. So there's very little kind of big lamps and things like that they used, you know. But I think the best thing about this movie has to be the characters and just how real everything feels in it, and all the background. Like one of my favorite characters is the head bank teller, who's she's just brilliant.
He calls her Mouth all the time because she's the one who's speaking up all the time. Yeah, he's like, hey, you Mouth, come here.
And like even there's a bit where like the cop in charge of trying to get them out, like tries to like grab her and go, no, you come with me now. And she's like, what are you doing?
She's like, I can't leave my girls in there. Yeah. She's like, get your hands off me.
But like, it's
she's
great.
She's fucking brilliant.
The comedy in this movie works so well. And it's, and you just can't tell. You're on the side of the bank robbers.
Like from the beginning, pretty much. Yeah. Like, it's just, you get the feeling almost immediately that they haven't got a fucking clue what they're doing. From the first moment when there's initially three of them, and then one guy just loses his bottle after they've started, and he's just like, and he just tells him, you know what, just go home. Yeah. And he's not mean about it, he's not angry about it.
But then it's the, and leave the car. How am I going to get home?
He's like arguing with him about like he doesn't want to take the bus. Yeah. Like, we're literally holding guns on people right now. Yeah. He's like, oh my god, it's so fucking good. The performances are universally magnificent.
Yeah.
In this movie,
John Cazale as Sal has this like real nervous energy that you're just like,
yeah.
Oh man, it just feels like at one point he even says that the whole plan is if it goes sideways that they were going to like commit,
kill themselves.
Yeah, they're going to kill themselves. And he's like going, what about that? What about that? Like, as if it's a viable plan.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, because it starts off and it's funny. Like, I mean, it's at first, like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
When the guy bottles out and then Sal, John Cazale playing Sal. Sal is just like, he's just got this intense, like, what the fuck look on his face for
the entire
film. He's just like, what the fuck? But he's just going, he's just like, I'm just going to put my head down and just do this.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you know, Sonny, played by Al Pacino, is just, like, scrambling. He's hard scrambling the entire time.
Yeah.
To be like, didn't expect this, don't know what to do about this, oh my God. And he's, like, having full conversations with his hostages and taking advice from his hostages. Yeah. Like, this is fucking insane. And it's hilarious, and it's dark, and it's very moving at times. It's incredibly moving and sad. There's some really sad moments, but it's you could almost be forgiven for labeling it a comedy,
because
it's so fucking witty.
It's one of those movies that it is part comedy. You know, yes, it's a crime drama or whatever you want to call it, almost, but biographical as well in a sense, because it did happen. It's based on a true story.
Yeah.
But like the whole way through. Maybe right up until the very end, there are moments of levity and which are needed, and it all comes very naturally from the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's going to segue me into my next bit of like background nonsense that I'm going to spout, because it's very unique for a Sidney Lumet movie in the sense that he's not one who usually goes for a lot of improvisation in his movies, but and this one you could argue that maybe it's not proper improvisation, because he always has at least 2 weeks ahead of the time where they sit around the table and they, you know, they get to know the script and all that, and they have read throughs. And with this one, the characters were not developed with the script. It was very open, so we had all the actors kind of try things and just be very loose with it and try and come up with things for their character and really try and explore and find their own character in it and put a lot of themselves in it. And then they wrote a lot of that into the script, but even on the shooting, he still allowed a lot of improvisation, because at this point, the characters knew their lines knew their characters that well that he kind of trusted them. And it works so incredibly. Like one of the standout scenes is, but for me anyway, that I found out was improvisation was John Cazale when Al Pacino asks him, where do you want to go? Like, they're talking about Algiers, and he goes,
Wyoming.
And, like, apparently that reaction from Al Pacino is real.
It's
because...
Like, what the fuck did you just say? It's like, it's not a country. That's the state. That's in America. It's not a country.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, it's so fucking good. That guy's... he's a guy who... He did not live very long after this.
No.
I think 2 or 3 years after this came out, I think it was lung cancer, I think, or throat cancer or something.
Yeah, which there's a scene in this which kind of almost ironically, he's
a chain smoker.
Yeah. He's telling people not to smoke because it'll kill them. And it's a bit, bit dark.
It's a bit bleak. But he's a guy who, if he had lived, I think would probably be up there with Pacino and De Niro.
Yeah.
Is being held up as this great, like, mid to late 20th century actor, like they are, because he's brilliant. I mean, he's been in some of the best films ever made.
I mean, he's fantastic as Fredo Corleone, and
he's
the
brilliant in Godfather Part 1 and 2.
Yeah, the Godfather.
He's brilliant.
There's
there's no other one. here we go. No, there is. It's just, you don't have to watch it. Don't watch Godfather Part 3. You'll be fine. Well, I'm curious to see the new one that they redid. They redid The Godfather Part 3 and called it Coda.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Completely re-edited, apparently. I'm curious to see that, but I haven't bothered my arse yet, so I'm clearly not that curious.
Yeah.
But again, he is brilliant. He's great in this. He's just this intense. That's the thing. It's funny. And then when you get introduced to Sal more intimately, when he starts talking and talking about things they've planned and the things he's willing to do, that's where the darker edge comes in, because you're like, he literally says that he is willing to kill people.
Yeah.
You know, that he's willing to kill all the hostages, like throwing bodies out the door. It's something that Sonny says off the cuff.
Yeah.
And maybe doesn't mean, but just wants them to take him seriously, and then he's all in, and that becomes... So he's this sort of... He's kind of scurry, because he could do something.
He's kind of unpredictable, and which is weird, because, like, Sonny, with all his, mad energy, all
he's
got, like,
bluster.
You kind of almost get a sense of what his character is, up until there's a point in this where, like, they start kind of... His wives are being interviewed and things like that, and the stories they're telling don't gel, and some of them are actually contradictory, which apparently, again, all came from the real story that this is based on, was all this was they couldn't really pinpoint his character in a sense, because everyone had a different opinion of him.
Yeah it's weird, because the way they each talk about him is very different. Like his wife and children, when they get introduced, she is saying stuff like that he's not usually like that, blah blah blah, and then all of a sudden he threatened her and stuff. Whereas when Leon is introduced, played ably by Chris Sarandon, which it took, I hadn't seen this movie in a while, and it took me a wee bit to recognize him, because his performance is fantastic in this movie, and he is a guy who I always think of as the villain in 80s like B horror monster movies.
Yeah.
You know, he's usually like a mad scientist or an evil doctor or something. And he's fucking amazing in this film. He's so good.
Yeah.
And like the whole backstory with him and Sonny is just like, it comes out, it's really unexpected. And it's kind of, it's touching. But then the more he talks about the relationship, you start to get like, oh, maybe Sonny is actually kind of, he's quite abusive.
Yeah.
He seems like he is at least, he's emotionally abusive. And maybe he's also full of shit.
Yeah.
You know? And that is, it's so, the characters are so well developed.
Yeah. And like,
so well developed.
Even when all that starts happening, you've already kind of built up, like, you as the audience member, because it feels like you're there. It feels like you're in it. You know, you are completely on board with Sonny, so to find this stuff out, you're like, it's shocking. It's like finding out a good friend is, you know, abusive.
Done something,
like,
something,
oh,
horrible,
fuck, I don't know.
And you never knew.
Yeah, it's like, fuck, really? And you're like disappointed in him, and it's almost like, oh fuck, like,
yeah, because at that point you're like, oh, I really like this guy and I want him to succeed, and then you learn all this stuff and you're like, oh, maybe I don't like this guy.
Yeah,
maybe this guy does suck. But Al Pacino's performance, as soon as you come back to him and whenever he's talking to people and stuff, you're just kind of like, I do still kind of like him. It's a dichotomy. it's the mark of a really good character.
Yeah.
You know, like, I like the character. I maybe don't like the person.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But it's a good character. It's a really good character. They're all great characters. I love the police lieutenant who's outside the whole time. Played by, I can't remember
Charles
the name of
Durning.
The actor. Charles Durning, who plays Pappy O'Donnell in O Brother Where Art Thou, which is, I kept hearing that. Whenever he gets agitated, you can hear that sort of that staccato kind of tone to his voice comes out, and it's great. He's he's really funny as well. He's just naturally just like, he's not necessarily saying funny things, but he says them in a funny way that kind of makes you laugh.
One of the most famous scenes, actually probably the most famous scene from this movie, featuring like when Sonny and Moretti are kind of having one of their head-to-heads, and Sonny starts shouting out Attica, which is the prison riot thing, which wasn't handled at all well by the police.
No.
That was all improvised, and Charles Durning didn't know what was going to happen. So the look
shocked.
Of confusion again, like, all these like wee improvisation things that, again, Sidney Lumet is not known for at all, and he just seemed to like pull off spectacularly well.
Al Pacino do?
He trusted
John
the
Cazale. That's cool.
Because Sidney Lumet, from the book anyway that I'm reading, he doesn't like this idea that. And we're very guilty of it, you know, where you kind of focus on the director of, like, that's the director's movie. He's very, like, no, it's a whole ensemble that makes a movie. You know, if your lighting's wrong, then it's fucked. And there's a whole department that deal with that. If your cameraman is crap, then you lose that element. If your actors are terrible, then, you know, and sometimes you can prop one of these bad elements with another. You know, bad acting, he says sometimes a camera, good camera work can hide bad acting and things like that. Mm-hmm. But you need a good team around you. And he's very, again, one of the reasons I like him, I like his thoughts of movie making is that it's very much a collaborative thing. And
yes,
I think with this, it's never more apparent because he gives so much trust and respect to these actors and they pull it off amazingly well.
So well. I mean, this, I don't want to make grand sweeping statements.
But I will.
But this might be the best Al Pacino performance.
Yeah, he's definitely
fantastic in The Godfather Parts 1 and 2. I mean, Michael Corleone is, he's another one of those characters that you like initially.
Yeah.
And as it goes on, you learn more about him, or maybe his character develops in a way that he becomes this other thing. And that's such, that is credit to Al Pacino.
Yeah.
And how, like, you're looking at the end of Godfather Part 2, you're like, I remember really liking this guy at the start of the first one.
Yeah.
And now he's awful, and it happens so naturally. And that is, again, the writing as well, but his performance is fantastic. Just, in this, he is phenomenal
And just to kind of prove how pointless and meaningless Academy Awards are, Al Pacino in 1972 was in The Godfather. In 1973, he was in Serpico. In 1974, he was in The Godfather. yeah, exactly. In 1974, he was in The Godfather Part 2. And in 1975, he was in Dog Day Afternoon. He did not win an Academy Award for any of those roles.
Must the Oscars be? If those four amazing films, every single one of them is brilliant, and he is so clutch to them being brilliant in a way. He's so good, and no best actor for Al Pacino there. You'd think he'd have armfuls of them, which is why, you know, the award ceremonies in general are bullshit.
They're pointless.
Except for our
apart
awards,
from our one, last week, which was completely...
Absolutely, it was completely valid and the most important and relevant awards you could possibly give out. If I could give one to Al Pacino just for being great, I would.
If I could give one to ourselves for, you know, being the only real award show, then I would.
Yeah, but who would give us... We can't give ourselves an award. We need another award show to give us that award, and then that would be bullshit, because it's not ours. It's someone else's award, and, you know, award ceremonies are bullshit, except ours. And
we'll work something.
Yeah, fuck awards. So, all award ceremonies are bullshit. I'm just going to quote, I guess, well, paraphrase South Park with the award ceremonies are dumb.
I do want to, because I think we should wrap this up pretty soon, because I'm in danger of just waffling on forever about this movie.
Put you near a Sidley Lumet movie and you're just like, all right, let's carve out 45 sometimes, minutes
here. Sometimes not all for the best. He's had a few missteps that he would even admit to himself. But the crowds in this movie, because this was all like kind of one set. They found a place that they could build the bank in and have their movable walls and things like that they need for shots, and that they had the street. But apparently the way they did this was they had tons of extras, and they had like groups of them where they went, right, you guys are like, you know, really anti-homosexual, you are this crowd, and, you know, you guys are like whatever, you know, blah blah blah. Had all these wee groups that had kind of a leader in them.
Yeah, because there are points, like there's the Pride squad essentially show up at one point to support him with their big signs and stuff. But then you got the guys here throwing things at them. And they got there's adversaries.
Yeah.
There's a war going on in the crowd outside at one point. Yeah.
But the whole thing is like so complicated, and like that they again, this all goes back to him kind of putting trust into essentially what are extras. But there was people from the neighborhood who were like wandering in just to nosy and stuff, In fairness, that apparently they did offer them like hotel rooms and stuff that they would pay for because of the disruption, but very few of them took it. A lot of them just wanted to gawk, and like they actively like encouraged them to look out their windows and be gawking in what's happening. But apparently all these people that came from the neighborhood and joined in the crowd were kind of almost taken in by these kind of head extras and were then utilized as part of the crowd. And like the whole thing works amazingly well. We're like, I just, even the planning for that just seems gargantuan. It just seems ridiculous that this all kind of worked. And I think it adds, I just keep going back to this word realism. It just adds this realism to those scenes. Like everything seems very organic and everyone's reacting to, you know, no one knew he was going to start shouting Attica, and it all just seems amazingly well done.
Everybody starts cheering and it all seems right.
And you've got some burn, you've got like, you know, you've these different different people in the crowd. It's not like, it's not all one hive mind, but there's more going in than maybe a different director would think of. But
it all works so well. So I'm just gonna say, John, you have talked so much about this movie, and I just have to just say I agree with things you're saying, and I'm very impressed with your Sidley Lumet knowledge, and it's fucking fascinating. But we have to move swiftly on and rob this bank.
That's what we're doing.
Yeah, so Dog Day Afternoon, fucking marvelous. All right, well, I wrote my little note and I passed it to the teller, but it's awful sweaty and smudged, and my handwriting's not very good at the best of times. She's just sort of staring at it and looking at me, and I feel like we should have approached this differently, John. I feel like we should have drawn more from the films. Maybe I don't know what we messed up. I think we will have plenty of time to think about that when we're in prison, because I'm pretty sure they've locked the doors and the cops are on the way. So, while we're waiting for them to come and haul us off, John, before we start getting retrospective about what went wrong, which of these did you think was the best movie?
And why is it Dog Day Afternoon?
Dog Day Afternoon? Because it definitely is Dog Day Afternoon.
We're doing that again, aren't we?
It's so easy to make this choice. It was maybe the easiest it's ever been.
It is. And like, that's the thing. I
don't hate Heat, I don't hate Point Break.
No. But I think it says a lot whenever you look at the runtime of these movies, and I have to remind myself that Dog Day Afternoon is 2 hours, over 2 hours. You know, but Point Break and Heat, well, Heat's almost 3 hours. You know, I feel the length of them. Like, I'm not in it as much as I am with, and like, don't get me wrong, Dog Day Afternoon, like, it does, it loses its momentum a wee bit towards the end.
Yeah.
It does kind of get a bit slower. But at that stage, I think you've already made the connection with the characters that you want to see where it's going, and you want to, you know, you want to reach the conclusion of the story, and you're actually worried for the characters as well. It's obvious. It's Dog Day Afternoon.
Fucking masterpiece. Once again, Sidney Lumet pulls it out and manages, I guess, as he would probably put it, like, as if he's did a good job as what is essentially a project manager.
He gets all
the right people together, and he puts them where they need to be, and he makes sure if there are weak points that they're shored up, and everyone is supported, and he does it so well, and he's been very, very good. I mean, is this the third one of his movies, or is this the second one of his movies we've actually talked about?
Second one, I think, that we've...
We have considered other of his films, and we have other of his films... that we are all very keen to get to, I guess, I'm very excited to go watch, and I think that is the mark of just a great director.
Yeah.
That you can, like, see a few of his films and then just be excited at the idea of seeing more stuff that he's made, you know? And I had that for a long time with John Carpenter whenever I got into John Carpenter, I guess. And I was like,
John Carpenter.
I need to, like, I had seen Halloween, you know, obviously, and then I watched The Thing.
Yeah.
And as soon as I saw The Thing, I was like, I need to see everything else this guy has done. Because I was like, this is the same guy who did Halloween, and it's so different, you know, from Halloween.
Yeah.
The Thing and Halloween are very different. And then you watch all his other films, and you're like, they've all got something else about them. You know, like The Fog is very B-movie, this and that, you know.
Yeah.
But it's done so goddamn well.
It's that thing where, like, yeah, there is a through line. There's a similarity that obviously you're getting because it's the director's voice in it as much as anyone else involved.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that's what I love about Sidney Lumet. He definitely has, like, a certain story that he tends to go for. Like, he likes these kind of crime thrillers and, you know, these looks into, like, anything kind of dishonest or...
Yeah, like, Serpico was all about that in Buckets.
Prince of the City is like, Serpico only... It's like a crooked cop.
Yeah.
Ends up going to the, what do you call them?
Internal affairs.
Yeah. You know, and it's compelling as well. It has its issues. It's a bit too long and stuff like that. But The Verdict is just amazing movie. Like, Paul Newman's fantastic in that, you know.
Yeah.
But he tends to go for these kind of stories, which I love anyway. So I'm already on board with the subjects. But
yeah, he handles them so fucking well when he does.
And just you'd mentioned before that this might, for you anyway, might be the best, like, Al Pacino performance that you've seen, and I would agree. And there's actually the phone call scene that they have with him and Leon. It was actually done, apparently, according to Sidney Lumet in his book, the first take was perfect. Al Pacino was absolutely destroyed at this stage. He actually later on would collapse in exhaustion. He just came off Godfather Part 2, and he was actually considered not doing this movie because he just felt, like, completely drained. But there's a long scene on the phone. They've two cameras that they've got, like, back-to-back, because back then the camera reel only held 10 minutes, so that when one stopped, the other one would take over kind of thing. So the first take was fine. The first take was perfect. And then Sidney Lumet said, right, we need another take. And Al Pacino was like, are you serious? And, like, started getting, like, really
fed the fuck up.
Probably. Yeah, that's it. And then he did it anyway. And that's the take they used. And I think it is fun. Like, I think it's one of the best scenes because...
He's so fucking drained and done with it. Yeah.
And there's that kind of, like... You kind of get the sense that he wants to scream at times, but it's just he doesn't have the energy.
He's on the edge and he's about to, and then he just sighs and deflates every time. And you're like, oh man, and he's so good.
Yeah.
He's so good. So yeah, I think I would say yes. I think I'm pretty firm in my this is the best Al Pacino performance if you want to rate them.
Yeah, and he's got Serpico's some fucking
brilliant
ones.
Too.
Yeah, Serpico's
like,
great.
Serpico's great. The Godfather is great. I like him a good bit in Heat. But again, there are problems with, like, wait, is this guy on coke or not? What's happening here? But again, if you want to talk about the other films and why we didn't choose them.
Yeah, I mean, even his lesser known ones he's great. And, like, I would recommend Cruising's really an interesting, dark film. Yeah. And... Like, even, like, Glengarry Glen Ross and Carlito's Way. And
I love him in Glengarry Glen Ross.
He's fantastic. That's where, like,
He swears in one scene in that. There's one scene in that movie where he unloads.
Yeah. And he's great at that. He's great at unloading.
It's brilliant.
When done right, that's the problem with his unloading and Heat is really, like, out of nowhere, as we said. She has a great ass! Where did that come from?
Yeah, that comes out in fucking nowhere. Like, there's another film, maybe, where that line makes sense.
Yeah.
And you look at it and you go, brilliant, Al Pacino was great. But in this, it's like, it's not appropriate.
No.
At all. It's so cartoonish.
I mean, if that happened in Devil's Advocate, that would make sense.
Yeah, because that's what that guy's like.
Yeah, he's ridiculous.
The fucking devil. He's Satan, you know, and he gets on like that. But yeah. He's not me for like most of the time in Heat. He isn't acting that way. He's super intense a lot of the time, yeah. But he's not doing that stuff. And then every now and then he does, and it doesn't feel right.
No.
But it is, I mean, he's still that's Al Pacino, and he's extremely good.
Yeah.
But that stuff is jarring a little. And again, the reason why we were not picking Heat, I think we've been very open about the fact that it uses its female characters exclusively as props.
Yep.
And it's about an hour too long. And most of that is concerned with using the female characters as props.
Yep.
Most of the fluff is that. Is spent doing that, and
if anyone listening has the means and the skill, I want them to go back to that scene where Edie is waiting for Robert De Niro in the car, and just replace her with a dog, a nice fluffy dog, looking very concerned. It is unbelievable.
A worried Cocker Spaniel perhaps yeah. would be more appropriate than a human woman.
Yeah. Yeah. It's in fact when she managed to open the door and get out of the car, it was almost shocking because I had this whole other narrative in my head at that point.
Yeah, it'd be really funny if it was a dog that just worked out how to work the car doors like a velociraptor in Jurassic Park. Somehow that is a better film because it makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is a fucking disgrace, really.
Yeah, a disgrace for your kind of grounded crime drama thriller thing.
Yeah, so that's out. And then Point Break, of course. Surfers suck.
Point Break,
everyone sucks. The acting's terrible. Sometimes it's fun, but not enough. And if you really like to see people close up doing surf stuff in slow-mo, then you might enjoy it.
Yeah.
You might enjoy it a bit more. Because some of the surfing, I think it is actually, it looks like it is actually Patrick Swayze doing some surfing, because they have some real close-up shots of him in the waves.
From what I've heard, yeah. He very rarely... He always tried to do his own stunts and stuff like that, obviously.
Yeah, Keanu Reeves does a lot of that stuff these days as well. He's
movie, even at this stage, Keanu Reeves was going kind of above and beyond to kind of get into character. You know, maybe it didn't work for this one, but he was training with like FBI guys and things like things like this to get into character. He was learning how to handle a gun right, and I always respect that at the very least when Keanu Reeves goes into
really
doesn't.
That scene early on where he's doing the shooting range, and it is pretty cool.
Yeah,
he's pretty good in that scene, and I mean, it's not a patch on that video that probably everyone has seen now of Keanu Reeves training for John Wick 2 at the shooting range with a real gun.
Yeah,
and that man seems like he is a murdering nightmare of bullets for real. And he really did that. I mean, he's the kind of guy that, there's like a great story of him. Like, I can't remember who it is. It was a female actress. I think they worked, maybe it was Winona Ryder or something. Mm-hmm. He's backstage at the Oscars. And he was just, there was some people were being very serious and talking while Keanu Reeves was standing behind them with Winona Ryder. I think it was Winona Ryder showing her this cool kung fu move that he'd learned for a movie. And that's just like, oh, what a guy, what a great guy,
he's awesome,
what a weird nice guy, he seems great. So unfortunately in Point Break, it's kind of, he is a block of wood that has not a lot to do. and is kind of doing the bro stuff, feels really forced and all that stuff, so it's not great. There are small bits of it I like.
And then that bit where he lets him go at the end is it is like a death sentence kind of for him, but it's just so stupid. It's like, why would you give this piece of shit even that?
Yeah, because fuck that guy. He sucks. Like, I don't know why he's decided he's his friend, because he sucks.
It's like,
he's a horrible person. He's a horrible fucking hypocritical twat.
Yeah, because one of the worst parts is when they kidnap Laurie Petty's character, Tyler. When they kidnap Tyler, and then Bodhi's all like, man, I really hate this. And like, this isn't me. And if it was up to me, I wouldn't be doing this. And you're sitting there going, you're a manipulative bastard.
Yeah, what the fuck? He's trying to make it seem like it's everybody else's fault.
So, charge. I'm totally, I have no choice.
Yeah, he fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah, screw both those films. I mean, again, there is stuff about each of those films I like, and there is some stuff in Heat that is magnificently done. The heist,
yes,
the bank, the actual bank robbery in it, that whole scene is incredible. I mean, and one of the best.
You can see why Christopher Nolan pretty much ripped it off for Dark Knight. It is iconic in that sense. You know, it really stands out.
The surrounding film doesn't hold up as much, but that particular scene to this day is still incredible.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, you've even got like games like Payday, which basically have made a game around the idea of it.
Yeah. The entire game is just the scene from Heat that everybody wants to play a game of. Yeah. And they've made a go, though that studio have made a living out of that, and they've done it quite well.
Fair play to them.
And that's fine. But like, and that has influenced that. But it was Dog Day Afternoon has influenced every bank robbery hostage thing ever.
I'm still waiting for the Dog Day Afternoon game.
Indeed, yeah.
nervously pace.
Press circle to nervously pace. Press triangle to shout Attica and sweat.
And that's because again, like just going to these characters, like and just how well done it is. There's a scene where Sonny is just kind of defeated. You know, it's kind of midway point of it, and like trying to work things out, and one of the bank tellers is trying to do the like army thing of like kicking the gun and spinning it.
Yeah, and he's handed her a loaded gun.
There's just like I just love that scene. Just I think more than anything, just shows you how close they've all become, and they're even rooting for them. I mean, at the very end, as the cars bring like coming up to the airport. And one of the girls is released then. She like turns around and says, "Sal, I know this is your first flight," and gives him a rosary bead and goes, "Just don't be nervous." And you're like, this is weird.
It breaks my heart, though, when it happens. It's so fucking heartbreaking. Oh, that movie. So yeah, goddamn masterpiece. It has been emulated in sitcoms and cartoons and TV shows. I mean, there's an episode of Supernatural which cribs heavily from it. There's an episode of Bob's Burgers that does exactly dog. I think it's called Bob Day Afternoon, actually. They have all that stuff. They do the same, like, you know, coming out of the bank with everyone, like, back-to-back with their arms linked together to hide. They do that exact thing, you know. It's penetrated the sort of the zeitgeist, as it were.
Yeah,
you know, and it's just there's a bunch of films that have emulated it not very well for the most part.
Yeah,
but it's cool to see it in things, you know. I like it when I see a TV show and oh, this is their dinnery dog day afternoon thing, okay. That's always fun. So it's fucking wonderful. So anyway, John, that's definitely the best movie easily by a million miles. Which of these films gives us the best advice to, I don't know, correct, if we, let's say we could go back and do this heist right, which of these films is the one that we can look at and say, that's what we should have done?
Well, apparently bank robbing isn't too good. You always seem to get caught, don't you?
Yeah, nobody ever seems to get away with it in the movies, really. I mean, in a way, Swizzy gets away.
To be honest, yeah, like in Point Break, they rob 27 banks in some ludicrous amount of time, like a month or
it's
something.
Like 3 months. I think it's a 3 month period where the waves is good.
Oh, sorry, I just found it. I just found it here. 27 banks in 3 years, which is still, you know. Because apparently this is one of the taglines.
Period only every year.
This is the tagline. 27 banks in 3 years. Anything to catch the perfect wave.
Those two things aren't related, though.
Nope.
Or the robbing the banks and the catching the waves aren't really. I mean, they're there in town.
Yeah.
And I guess that's how they say they're getting away, I think.
Yeah.
But then that doesn't actually happen in the movie. They never actually use surfing to get away, ever.
No, because that would be ridiculous. That would be, it'd be kind of awesome if they did, because it's so stupid. Yeah. Because from what I understand with surfing, you go out a bit and then you come back onto the shore.
Yeah, you don't really, it's not really a form of
transport.
Travel. Yeah. It's for dicking around near a beach and then you come back in, you know, you don't surf all the way to Mexico.
Yeah, I mean, I've watched Surf's Up enough times to know how surfing works.
I'm very sorry, John. So yeah, that's probably not, I don't know if that's good advice. Heat.
I mean, the only thing I will say about Point Break is He's very successful right up until the point where he gets greedy.
Right up until they extremely...
Don't go into the vault.
Don't take the vault. That's a good advice.
Yeah.
I don't know if heat helps us out. Is that it?
Heat's messy. Yeah, heat gets messy.
Heat gets very messy. Up until then, again, these both of those films are very much like, these guys have been great up until we see them.
Yeah, unfortunately, in Dog Day Afternoon, Sonny and Sal aren't... I forget what their friend who starts it with them.
Their buddy who leaves immediately, yeah.
You know, they're not... I don't think they're going to help us much. It's been a bad idea from the start. Their intel was wrong.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do. They panic. He burns that ledger, which attracts people. And
don't really understand why he's doing that either. He doesn't really explain why.
And then the cop messes up because he rings him instead of just letting them come out and catching them there.
They should have just waited until they come out and nab them, but they didn't. Everyone's incompetent in that movie. Yeah. Yes, which I feel like is more sort of our sort of scene.
Yeah.
And that's more
I definitely
like, you know,
identify more with Sal and Sonny as bank robbers than I do any of these other ones.
Any of the other ones at all. I don't identify with anybody in Heat.
So I think maybe we should do what their friend did and just walk away.
Should we just... I mean, yeah, let's just go. Will we just... I mean, I really wanted to buy a pony, but I guess it's always next year.
Yeah.
Because we're going to do this every year.
Rob a bank or do the podcast?
We'll do this podcast. Yeah. We're going to do this podcast in a bank every year. And get disheartened and give up, possibly. We'll see.
Nice.
Awesome. So, yeah. Good on us for walking away. Off we go. Let's just go get the bus, will we?
Yeah.
Will we get the bus? Because I didn't bring a car.
No.
And neither did you. I mean, we got the train here. Anyway.
Which, again, might have been an oversight.
Yeah, huge, again, planning. Planning was not our strong suit. We're a lot like Sonny and Sal in that regard. Ray, well, that's all we have time for this week as we head home on the bus, evading the capture of the incompetent cops. We are on Twitter. We are at 7dayapocalypse. That is at numeral 7dayapocalypse. Mm-hmm. You can email us filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. That's filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. You can also visit our YouTube channel where we put full episodes up there. To this week's apocalypse, of course. All right, John, well, I guess we'll just plonk down here with our guns and our bags and our president masks and our clown masks and our pig masks and just sort of ride this bus to, I don't know, Donegal?
Yeah, why not?
We'll go hide out in Donegal until the heat's off.
Donegal. It's not Donegal. Donegal.
Donegal. Donegal. Donegal.